Dr. Jeffrey Moore has raised over 40 kids. That's right, 40 plus. He's one of the leaders when it comes to getting people with disabilities hired in companies all over the country. He's basically one of the best people you're ever going to meet. And he's joining us today on Driven by Purpose.
This is Driven by Purpose, a show about finding your purpose, building fulfilling careers, and helping people with disabilities live better lives. Hosted by three men who've lived it and are here to help you do the same. Special thanks to our presenting sponsor, Clean Logic, a leading bath and skincare company and a true pioneer in creating inclusive workplaces and increasing employment opportunities for people with disabilities.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Driven by Purpose. My name is Evan Rosenbaum, along with the two greatest co-hosts in the world, Isaac Shapiro and Mike Gesser. What's going on, fellas?
Hey, Evan.
What's up, greatest co-host as well?
That's right. Shout out to Clean Logic and the Inspiration Foundation. We've got a guest today that we just found out right before we started shooting has raised. I have two children, and I love them so much. They're the greatest joys of my life. My daughter, Sydney, and my son, Bennett. Man, it is hard raising two kids. Imagine raising 40. 40 kids.
Not all at once.
But that is impressive. And by the way, not only 40 kids, but like the work that our guest does in the disability community, the good work that he does, the amazing work that he does. We're going to learn all about Jeffrey Moore today. Jeffrey Moore, welcome to the show. It's a pleasure to have you, sir.
Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me. It's a delight to be here. And, delighted to be able to talk about something I'm extremely passionate about. And, both on the personal side and on the professional side, and delighted to meet Isaac and some of the gentlemen you had on the show before. Randy Lewis was a big inspiration for me and what I'm doing in my research, thanks to him. And then met Tom Gustafson, some incredible individuals with huge purpose-driven lives. And yeah. I'm just delighted to be with you guys.
Real trailblazers in the world of laying out the blueprint for businesses to hire people with disabilities, because there were a lot of people in big businesses, small businesses that were afraid for a long time because there were a lot of things, you know, they didn't know about hiring people with disabilities. There's a lot of, Isaac, you've said it a lot on this show. There are a lot of fear-based, you know, fear of the unknown. You know, but the numbers have shown over and over and over again that people with disabilities are as good, if not better, than a typical person when they're trained upright and you give them the right resources. And Jeff, that's why I'm so excited to have you here, because you are a professor at Anderson University in South Carolina. We were talking before. I love South Carolina. Shout out to South Carolina, Charleston, Palmetto Bluff, all those great places. But you have really spent a lot of time studying, researching, working on this exact topic about how people with disabilities, how they can benefit the workplace. I'll just let you take it away from here. I mean, if you want to expand on this.
Sure. Yeah. Well, actually, you know, this connection is very personal for me and really faith-based. It started when I got married, and when I said I do, I had no idea what I said I do to. My wife is
That's typical.
A counselor. Yeah. And she specializes in adoption. And so, you know, when you're kind of meeting, you're dating, you're like, how many kids do you want? You know, and those things, you know, we thought seven. I was like, yeah, whatever, dear. And her calling became my calling. And in our, you know, 30 years of marriage, we raised about 40 kids, a little bit more.
Amazing.
Most of them with disability. So we always had six kids in the house. So, you know, it's not all at once, but we've had the whole range of disability. And so also
incredible.
We've adopted kids internationally, you know, from the age between 6 and 12 when they came, and they had trauma backgrounds. And so, you know, this inclusion isn't a theory for us. It's, you know, our daily calling. Our home taught me something I now say everywhere: people don't heal and grow because life gets easier. They heal and grow because love gets stronger. Mm-hmm. You know, so for us in the home, that meant structure, patience, consistency, seeing the need behind the behavior, not just reacting to certain things that you see. But every person has dignity and purpose. And we learned something pretty simple: high support and high flexibility. That changes outcomes without lowering expectations. You don't lower the bar, you know, so what you're doing with your kids or your employees is not asking them to do less. You just adjust the environment. You adjust the coaching or the approach, and then the pathway and the structure, so that person can succeed, that child or that employee. But it all started really with one of my students in the MBA program that talked to me about this place they worked at was Walgreens. And I hearing the story, I'm like going, what? That sounds like what I do at home with my wife. You know, this is kind of how we manage, like managing in the gray. It's not like having this hard stance and saying, you know, this is right and this is wrong and just being authoritarian. And so I heard him talk about that, and I just felt this nudge, almost like God connecting the dots. And it was like, what we practice at home is what organizations can practice at work: belonging, dignity, pathways for people to thrive. So it's really simple life DNA, but it's really hard. And I think, you know, we talked a little bit earlier, some of the issues are fear. So, you know, as I just had some things that I wanted to share with you as we go on around that fear-based bonding and the joy-based bonding. And so some of the things that I found in the research. But all this started off at Walgreens and studying people with disability just from one of my students working there. And so I was just amazed that this kind of employee focus could also be in the workplace. And it's not about less, it's actually about higher outcomes.
So now talk to us a little bit about, so you're got married, you had kids, you've had this program. Tell us to fill the dots here. You get your PhD, you're working, you know, so how did you get into this work and starting to build it? Was it from the beginning when you started your PhD? So I'd love to just learn a little bit from your path of...
Sure. Yeah. So my dissertation was in Romania. So actually I was in Romania working with World Vision, helping small businesses grow right after 1990, the fall of communism there. So I was there helping those who were in prison to come out and to have jobs. And then I met this Texan girl there, and she was about getting kids.
You met a Texan girl in Romania? As one does, I guess.
Hey, you know, you have to find the precious stones, you know, and I had to go to Bucharest, Romania. But she was the director of Holt International. And so, you know, her passion was to helping kids and families thrive. And she was part of the team that created foster care for the country of Romania.
Wow.
And,
wow.
You know, I just saw that transformation from the inside out, you know, creating structure. And where there's a lot of destruction, you can have life, you know? And so here I saw these people that were involved in improving society. And I was like, dang, you know, that's really what life's all about, is bringing something good to the people and where we are at. And so, you know, if you would ask me, does it take money and all that? And I would say, I mean, money is nice, but that's not where you start. You know, you really have to have that start from individuals really caring deeply about others and creating a better environment. So, you know, my dissertation was on the role of a consultant in small businesses in Eastern Europe, but I really found it was about this ethic, you know, this virtue. Love is the way that you develop. You know, you can use deception, you can use fear, you can use manipulation, but long-term, those things don't build a healthy organization or culture. So, you know, from that starting point, I just realized that healthy relationships were the secret to good families, good business, and good society, you know? And so that's why I love what you guys are doing in this purpose-driven, initiative that you're doing. Is that's really true change comes that way.
So I have a couple questions for you. And on this show, you were so lucky to be able to talk to people like you and other leaders in this space from all over the country, because it's great. We're not talking to people that are just from one state, just from one city, that are getting one experience with one part of the country. We're getting people from all over the country. And I'm curious, you're studying this, you're in South Carolina, I'm in Los Angeles, you know, you guys are in Pennsylvania. Where are you seeing it trending in the right direction? Which states, which areas are doing it right? Where is it growing? Where are you seeing things happening well? And where are you seeing areas where it could use improvement?
Well, I think at one point, you know, what I've seen not work well is this kind of tokenism, you know, hey, I'm going to hire one or two people with disability. It's part of my, corporate social responsibility, you know, hey, check, we're good. Really, that really doesn't work. It doesn't change the culture. Maybe it helps one or two people, but, and that's great for them. But if you're really looking for transformational change, that's not going to get you there. It really is about becoming a better leader. And, you know, we found this in the family. Even the courts, you know, the courts have this idea of good enough parent. And if you're not good enough, the courts are going to take your kids away because, you know, of neglect or these other things. And what I've seen in organization, there's this kind of idea of good enough manager. Yeah, you know, I'm good enough. I'm getting the metrics, I'm managing. But really, there's a calling for us in organization, the leader, to be better than that, to be excellent leaders. And what does that look like? It's simple. It's leaders who help others flourish. You know, it's a simple concept because everybody I've talked to in organizations, when I ask them, you know, who is the most important person in your life? They don't talk about the richest person in their life or the most connected person, or talk about the people that invested in them, you know, and it yeah. might be a grandparent, it might be a parent, it might be a coach, might be a teacher. But those things are the things that change us. It's individuals who invest in us to flourish. In the business, I've seen distribution centers getting there. So the positive ones is, hey, they have a big need. Here in the U.S., we have employment issues. And so some organizations are really trying to find desperately employees to fill a gap. And what I'm trying to get out there is this awareness. Hey, there's this hidden golden pipeline. And these individuals are more loyal. they're not absent. They're about 50% less have less absenteeism. They work safer and they're just as productive. The only thing you have to do is have a personal relationship with them. Communicate on a personal, individual way so you can understand how to make them successful. So it asks you as a leader to be not just good enough and get things or hire people that it's easy for you to manage, but it pushes you up. And that actually makes it better for everybody.
100%.
Makes sense.
I think the way that when you're talking about creating the relationship with the people, a good manager, any leader should create the same kind of relationship with someone with a disability as without a disability. But if it's forcing you to level up, you're going to see it scale across the company.
Absolutely right. Yeah, because what you're doing is you're instilling that into your leadership for them to do that with their people. And so then that's really pushing the leadership out of the fear component and into the joy component. The joy is, hey, I see this person totally transform. I'm investing. You know, it's you're in the little league. You're coaching little league. You know, the joy is you're helping these kids, you know, improve and flourish, that's joy, you know? So in the organization, we're either going to be led and motivated, driven by joy or fear, you know, pick your poison,
right?
You know? And so I would say go for joy. It's a little more uncomfortable. You have to level up, but dude, it'll change your life.
100%. You know, well, you also said something a little earlier. You're talking about how the experiences that you had in your home with your wife and all of the children is what pushed you over into your business and into your PhD and your, and what you're doing today. And I can, I relate in the same sense. Like for me, I have, like, my daughter is disabled and we had all these different types just of accessibility
yep.
in our home. And I saw it. I was like, okay, well, why don't we just bring that into the company?
Yep.
And so we did. And that's kind of
yep.
one way that, that Clean Logic evolved into the organization that we have today. It was just simple. But I think it also is, it's, you know, you're a little unique. I'm a little unique. I think all of us on this call is right. unique as
yep.
we have it. It's so close and personal that it's easier for us to bring it into an organization or to anywhere right. that we go to. And I think other people don't have that. And correct. What you're doing is super helpful because it's going to level the playing field or make it easier for others to start bringing that into their business and create huge change.
Yeah. Well, I think what's important for me today and helping to continue to build on, I think the success we've seen with Randy Lewis being on, yep. Tom Gustafson, they've had great viewership. And so what I would like to get a little bit more into is the data, since you are the data guy. That's what a case study yeah. brings, right?
right.
So maybe we can get into detail. And I love what, you know, we talk about, you started talking about some of those economic benefits, you know, more loyalty, you know, the culture transformation, because I think that's what we're all trying to look for, because the better you have a culture, the less headaches we all have to deal with in terms of leaders. But what I want to understand, when you brought all these points together and what you've studied, and you've got, you know, Walgreens, Sephora in this case study, is there something, what is the things that when you talk to the leadership at those organizations and they're proud of what they've created in the workforce, what out of all those benefits do you see is like, this is why everybody does it? What do you see is like that number one reason? Because you said you're trying to get awareness out there. What is that number one thing that you've seen in your case study that these organizations can lead on and tell people, this is why you got to do it?
Well, really, what I've seen is the transformation of the manager or supervisor. That's really the key. And what I've seen, you know, I've interviewed these people. So I've gone to, you know, it's not just in South Carolina. I went to Georgia. I went to New England. You know, I went to Las Vegas. I went all over the Sephora group, all their distributions in the U.S. And it's the same story, you know. So you know, sometimes they think, well, maybe it's the South, you know, they're just like nicer people. Well, I live in the South and it's true. They're, you know, they don't honk and swear at you as much as, you know, when I was in New York. You know, I think, you know, the New Yorkers were just saying, have a good day in a different way than the Southerners. Sure. But the story was the same. It's managers being transformed. And, you know, our businesses, our organizations shouldn't be this just transactional thing that we just try to get through the day. We're a wheel in the cog and, you know, we just need to get a paycheck and move on. There's so much more to life than that. You know, there's beauty in relationships. And if you're managing, you know, doing service together, or if you're building a product or building a plane, there's beauty in that relationship in those organizations. And what I've seen is when individuals have, you know, leveled up and opened themselves up to, you know, a different employee that they maybe weren't comfortable with or didn't understand everything about, but that interaction leveled them up and innovation started to flow. That joy piece, that belonging piece came in. They're all talking about this workplace family. Well, you know, in this era, most people aren't calling their workplace a family. You know, they're like, it's my paycheck. I'm not going to stay here any more than I have to. Discretionary effort is at zero right now. You know, it's like, you need to pay me more for me to do anything. So I just saw this workplace family totally different. People belonging at Sephora. I interviewed people that they moved states so that their kids could work in the distribution center. It's like, you know, you don't, I mean, this stuff is, I'm not making it up. And I, you know, managers are coming to work because of that sense of purpose, that sense of belonging to something greater than just what they're doing. So yeah, the numbers are killing it, but it's not for the numbers. It's because it's a byproduct of this transformation that happens within that. And so, you know, really for inclusion to be integrated, it has to be kind of like what Mike said, you know, it's in our family. We're all in. We're going to figure this out, you know, and yeah, we don't understand everything, but that's not going to stop us. We're going to figure something out. That's what the managers are doing. And then they're being changed.
Yeah, I think one thing I always do is a couple of shows. I love our show, Driven by Purpose. And I think you're just defining the importance of purpose, whether 100%. It is around disability or you have a personal connection. But what I am hearing, because we've seen it at Clean Logic, we've had people say, I had no purpose in my life. I went to my job. I love what I did. I'm willing to do this. I go collect the paycheck. But I actually have purpose. And I feel like, again, our goal for this show is to broaden our community, our temple around the disability community, because purpose is something that I feel like we all strive for in whatever we do. And I just think you defined and gave us more data around what the importance of purpose is. It's not just showing up and collecting a paycheck and just doing those things. I think that's what we all secretly, if you're not purposeful at your job, I've heard it over and over of like, God, I wish I had purpose. So I just love what you've really defined around purpose and the importance of it. But I think the disability community could help bring a lot more purpose through organizations is what I'm hearing, because that's what we've seen at Clean Logic is like people saying, I didn't have purpose. And we can go down the list, not just one or two people have said this, and we've watched people transform. So I just love that you defined it in this case study of a broader sense of purpose.
I love it.
And I just want to add one thing to your point, Dr. Moore, and also to Isaac's. When you have that purpose, when people are coming to work because they really like it, because it gives them a sense of self, a sense of purpose, that's when the results follow and the numbers come in.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. Why? Because the key thing is respect, communicating individually with the person. So you're not forcing them to say, hey, if you can't figure out how I communicate, you're fired. No. I'm figuring out, you know, you're flipping the pyramid, you know, and you're saying, okay, as leader, I'm going to do the effort to understand you and what makes you successful. We don't know all these disabilities, what they are, but we do know that if we create a respectful, authentic relationship and get the person on board, like they know what works for them. You know, they're a specialist. They've overcome their challenges. So they're the experts. So let's get them involved. Let them talk. And then you're working for their success. It changes everything. And
that's right.
What I've seen is amazing things like people at Walgreens, for example, that were blind, right? And they wanted to do inventory. And you're like, how does somebody who's blind do inventory? Like, what the heck? You know, and then I saw another one where, you know, he's deaf and he wants to drive the forklift, you know, like, hey, you need to hear honking and like, how does that all work? You know, and like, we don't know how that all works, but the team got together. The team were like, oh, okay. You know, so he has to check his horn. So he puts his hand in his horn every morning when he starts up. He blows it to make sure there's vibration so that the horn actually, he knows that it's working. They put lights in. So, okay, the whole team is all in for this guy to do his job. It changes everything. The energy is incredible. Plus, they're the ones innovating, right? So the organization is learning. You bring some other problem from, you know, the industry, like bring in AI. They're going to figure that out too, you know? So it's not people who are fearful, defensive, saying, okay, I'm just hanging on, you know? No, no, no. So it changes the whole dynamic of the organization. Yeah. It's a learning organization, which we all know that's what delivers results. It's not the fear-based one.
You also said the team. The team is the one that's figuring out. Exactly. And when you truly have a team that's operating as a team, that's when all of the things that you want to happen are able to happen. Everybody's involved.
Yep. That's exactly right. Yep.
And just like, it's so easy and lazy for somebody just to shut something down and say no. Right. And just say,
we've all been there, you know, I can raise my hand.
Yeah. But to your example that you just gave, for whoever the manager is or the decision maker that was like, you know, when the deaf person said, I want to drive the forklift, for somebody to be like, all right, I understand that there is a challenge to that.
Right. But
let's meet the challenge.
Yep.
Let's figure out how to do this in a safe and responsible
way.
And finding the way around, instead of just saying no and saying, all right, let's figure out if it's possible and doing it in a safe, responsible way. That's way better than just saying no and shutting it down and moving on to the next thing. And there's so many benefits that go along with that. And that's great. And that's good leadership.
Well, management really has to be different, you know, so management has to release control, and which most of the time management's fear-based, you know, like, hey, if I don't hit my metrics, you know, my boss is going to chew me out. The VP is going to, you know, have me on the axe. So there's all this fear-based stuff and not a lot of true leadership. Tons of management, not a lot of leadership. So if you can create a space where the innovation can happen, there's learning. Hey, we're not going to get this right all the time. Another example was an individual with cerebral palsy couldn't really use the keyboard. And so they had these keyboards at these stations, you know, employees did. So basically the team's like, hey, you know, I can put one of those easy buttons, you know, from Staples, I can connect it to there. And then she can just with her elbow hit the easy button and then it works, you know, and guess what? They put the easy button on everybody's station, you know, so that accommodation didn't just help one person. It helped everybody. So, you know, this thing they're living it, you know, so it's not like, oh, okay, just, you know, isolated in a corner. These adaptations, you know, leveling up the manager helps everybody, because disabled or not disabled, the manager, you know, what I found in these organizations, they can't just fire people. You know, they have to go back and say, hey, what did the supervisor or HR is going to say? What did you do, you know, to help this person be successful? Like, show me that, not just, hey, you know, HR, please fire this person.
Yeah.
You know, they're not working anymore.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Now, I know we got to get closing here, but I think you've given a lot of great
feedback.
Is seeing one of the things that we've been trying to do at the beginning of this year is really, how do we get people to take the leap of faith? You know, Tom Gustafson said, it took me 6 months to get off the fence. And so I think you're giving a lot of great data to continue to support. There is fear, and fear is okay. Yep. So, you know, I appreciate what you really have brought today with the learnings that you've continued to, you know, talk about. Evan, you always do a great job closing us out, but I really want to thank you, Dr. Moore, for just giving a lot of continued data to support this to get people off the fence.
Yes.
Absolutely. I think inclusion isn't hard because people with disability are hard to work with. So I don't think that's true. I think it's hard because leadership habits are hard to change. That's the real issue with inclusion.
Yeah.
Yep.
I have one last question before we get out of here, just because I grew up in a house. We had four kids in my house growing up. And you had a lot of kids in your house growing that you were raising. What was the number one snack in the house? What was the number one snack most popular?
Ice cream by far of any kind. you know, so everybody's looking in the freezer. They're hiding it under the fish. They're hiding it everywhere. Yeah, yeah, ice cream by far. How about you?
You know what's funny? Those mini Ritz, they used to make the mini Ritz with the peanut butter, the little Ritz sandwiches in those bags. Nice. Those were super popular in our house. Everybody used to grab those.
That's awesome.
Anyway, that's it. Look, I can't thank you enough, Dr. Moore. Really appreciate it. Remember, if you like this show, you want to help us grow our community, tell a friend, tell a friend, tell a friend. Like, subscribe, comment, do all the things. And most importantly, check back in with us next week on Driven by Purpose. We appreciate you guys very much. Thanks to Dr. Jeffrey Moore. See you guys next time. Driven by Purpose.